Today is Thursday, March 20th, 2008. I am H.F. Williamson. I am interviewing Jim Fisher for the Veterans History Project of the Library of Congress American Folklife Center. We are at Studio X, Campbell Hall, on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana, Illinois. Henry Radcliffe is the director of lighting, sound, and camera. Jim, I'd like you to start out telling me where you were, what you were doing before you were called up, and how you came to join the Navy.
Well, I was working in Chicago in a machine shop with where my brother-in-law worked, and my wife's cousin, wasn't my wife at the time, but her cousin and I decided to join the Navy one day.
What that time? Was, what year? What date?
It was in 42.
Okay.
So we joined the Navy on June 1st, 1942.
And, how quickly after you joined were you sent off to your basic training, your boot camp?
Oh, right away.
Okay.
Right away.
Where was that? Great Lakes. At Great Lakes?
Great Lakes boot camp, yeah. Then after that, I went to school at Iowa State, electrical school.
Had that been your choice, or did they select you?
Well, I wanted to go to gunner's mate school, but, you know, I wanted to fire the big guns. But they sent me to electrician's mate school.
How long was that program?
That was more than 4 months, from August until December, I think it was. And then after that, I think it went to, let's see. I went to Gyro Compass School in San Francisco. And it seemed like I went to another school too, but anyway.
Were you being trained to be on a particular type of ship, or this was just general training for all types of ships?
It was a general training. But see, at that time, they needed a bunch of guys to man these LSTs. So that's how I became an LST crewman.
And, but the training was general. It wasn't specific for LST only. So
no.
You could have gone on any type of ship if necessary.
Yeah.
So you've now finished your schools, and where were you assigned to join your craft?
To Vancouver, Washington.
Oh.
And I went aboard this ship here, the LST 475. And I was on that until...
When had that ship been commissioned?
Oh, I put it in commission.
Okay, you were a plank owner.
I was a plank owner, yeah. And I was in on that ship for, let's see, from March 17th, 1943 until December, until September 1945.
Wow.
2.5 years, maybe
a little
more.
Almost the entire war.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So how long did you train as a crew off of the United States before you went?
Not very long.
Really?
We just took the ship down the Columbia River on the first trip to make sure everything was all right. And then we were going to leave right away, but there was a big storm in the Pacific. And they didn't want to let us go out until that storm got over. So we stayed in Astoria, Oregon for 2 or 3 days. And then we went on down to San Diego, I think it was, yeah. And then came back up to Frisco, and they put a bunch of guns on our ship. More guns. We had a lot of guns on our ship.
Well, these were installed on your ship. You weren't just carrying. They weren't cargo. They were part of your armament.
Yeah, yeah. Seven 20s at that time. And then we had 3-inch gun. And several 50s, 50 caliber machine guns.
Were some of those anti-aircraft, or were they all?
Yeah, they were all for anti-aircraft. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, was this the typical armament on an LSD? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. But I think we had a few more than some of the other LSTs. We were pretty well armed. None of those kamikaze planes ever got to us.
Well, you'll have to tell us more about that when you're out on the Pacific Theater.
Yeah.
So you have your armament on, and you're getting ready to take off, I assume.
Yeah. We left May 2nd from Frisco.
Now, when you go, are you by yourself or are you with other ships?
There might have been a couple other LSCs, but there wasn't any escort. We just went right on over to Pearl Harbor. And that was a pretty safe place to go, you know, between Pearl Harbor and the United States.
So there wasn't much risk of submarines between that? Okay.
No.
How long were you at Pearl?
About a week. One week or less.
Not for much training, just to get ready to go.
Yeah, we had a cargo that they dropped off at Pearl Harbor, and then we loaded. Seemed like I don't remember them loading much stuff on at Pearl Harbor. But then we went from there down to Samoa.
How long a trip was that?
Well, that was about 2,000-mile trip.
Wow.
And then from there we went to the New Hebrides.
Now, in your training, had you practiced landings at all?
No.
Really?
Mm-mm.
Oh, my gosh.
No. No, they sent us over there without ever even beaching the ship anyplace. Yeah.
Why?
Well, they wanted to get us over there.
Okay.
And actually, it's not that hard to run a ship up on the beach. The main thing is that you don't drop the stern anchor too quick. And I was the one that operated the stern anchor.
Oh, well, then you needed practice.
Well, one time we lost it because, you'd get the order to drop the stern anchor, and that's all you could do. You know, you had to obey orders. And the ship kept going and going and going and never hit the beach. And the cable come out of the cable drum, and we still hadn't hit the beach. So we lost it. And that was a big job getting that back. Boy. 24 hours before we got it all the cable back. 900 feet of cable. That's a lot of cable. And there's cable this big around.
Oh, gosh. Did you have to do it manually? Or?
Well, they took the boat, small boat, and with a grappling hook, and they caught the cable about in the middle of it, which was a kind of bad thing to do. If they could have got the end of it, it would have made it a lot easier because we could have hooked it right to the drum and wrapped it up.
Mm.
But we had to take that cable and lay it out on the deck, 900 feet of it. And finally, let's see, that took over 24 hours, just about the whole crew. And we got back and then wrapped it up on the drum, and that was it. Got the anchor back. We got everything back, right. But it just took a lot of time.
A day you didn't want to spend again, I bet.
Oh.
Well, anyway, I interrupted you. So you traveled from Pearl to Samoa, and then further on. And what was the ship assigned to do in those days?
Well, from New Hebrides, we went to Brisbane, Australia, and then from Brisbane. We loaded up over 4,000 cases of beer in Brisbane on a tank deck and some other stuff, some Pepsi-Cola or Coca-Cola, and then we went up to New Guinea. And we got up to New Guinea about August 13th in 43. And after we got there, we had a LCT on our main deck. And after we got up there to Milne Bay, we put a 12-degree list on the ship to starboard and slid that LCT off. It looked like it was going to sink when it hit the water. So it went way down. And let's see. After that, then we prepared to make some landings. I don't know. I don't ever remember any practice landings. Except the first invasion we made at Ley, New Guinea. That's about the first landing that I ever remember of.
This was under fire.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so that was your practice landing. Was a real one.
Yeah.
What were you carrying up on the beach?
I think we had some tanks and a lot of trucks and a lot of army equipment. And
which wave was your ship in, roughly?
Which way what?
Which wave?
Oh.
Were there other ships ahead of you, or were you one of the first?
No, we were the first one. There was only six of us, and we all went into the same beach. But there were some LCIs that... those guys that were on those LCIs really got, those LCIs had ramps on both sides of the ship. Oh. And as the soldiers came off of those ramps, ran down those ramps, they were perfect targets. A lot of them got killed. But
how did your ships do? Were any of them damaged? On this landing, I mean?
Were any what?
Were any of your ships damaged by the enemy fire on your landing, or?
No. Okay. No. We didn't even get hit.
Good.
We unloaded and got off the beach, but the thing that happened before we got to this landing, we were attacked by about 30 Japanese planes. And that was in the afternoon of the midnight landing. See, we landed at midnight, which was a bad thing to do. After that, we never landed at dark anymore. We always landed in the daytime. So you could see, you know?
Right, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So how many, you said that the Japanese, 30-some airplanes attacked you?
Yeah.
That's you and the other six or seven ships?
And a friend of mine got killed on the other ship, a ship about 300 feet away. And on that ship, one of the guys got the Congressional Medal of Honor. They were only 300 feet away from us.
On this invasion?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. See, this was in the afternoon before the midnight invasion. And that's when those planes attacked us.
Were they stationed on that island and were trying to defend the island, I assume?
Yeah. Japs. The Japs, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But these planes, see, they came in and attacked the convoy before we ever got there because they knew, they had a pretty good idea what we were going to do, so right. They did all the damage they could do before we got there.
Now, this convoy includes other LSTs. Does it also include destroyers or cruisers or any capital ships?
Well, destroyers, and there were maybe a couple of them. This really wasn't a big invasion, but... it was a bad one as far as I'm concerned because it really, you know, a friend of mine got killed on one of the other ships.
I can understand. Yeah. Yeah. So that was the first invasion that your craft had been in.
Mm-hmm.
Now what happens after that? Do you continue taking things to the beach after the first wave or?
Well, we just went on in and unloaded and got off of the beach.
So you don't. There's no additional trips to the beach.
Well, I don't. We may have gone back up there again, from Milne Bay up to Ley. That's about 300 or 400 mile run.
Well,
it's quite a ways. And I don't remember if we made a resupply run or not. But this 473 that got hit, they took them to Australia, and they were down in Australia for over a year getting fixed up. That's how bad they got hit.
So now that this invasion is, you're done, what do you do next?
Well, we made several more in New Guinea, and let's see. We made invasion at New Breton Island, and that was a bad one. We got stuck on the beach and couldn't get off.
And you're under fire at this time?
Yeah.
Can you fire back with your 50 calibers? Or?
Well, I don't remember them doing that so much, but what happened, they were trying to pull us off of the seagoing tug, an Australian seagoing tug, and they had a cable. Let's see, they hooked it to our cable, yeah, our stern anchor cable. And they started trying to pull us off, and we had our engines going full speed astern, and first one, then the other, so the ship would kind of go back and forth like that. Trying to wiggle off the beach is what we were trying to do.
Like a snake.
Yeah, but it didn't work. Finally, when they were pulling on us real hard like that, that darn cable broke.
Oh, no.
And another guy and I were on the fantail. That was my station, fantail. And that cable missed my head by about that far, I guess. Come right over our head. But got out of that all right. And then the next morning, when the tide came in, we got off the beach. And, of course, that was a landing where there were even mines. They had mines out in the before we could get into the beach. There were mines in the water.
Did any of the ships hit the mines?
No, not that I know of. But, you know, it's kind of, they were watching out for them close, you know.
Very carefully.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is it a little unnerving to spend a whole night on the beach with under fire or?
Yeah, not so much under fire, but the Japs, we got a report that the Japs had broken through the Marines' lines and they were coming toward the ships. So then they issued everybody a gun, you know, like a 45, just in case the Japs did get on board the ship or to try to keep them off.
Right.
But they never did. They never did make it. They never did get on board the ship. And the next day, next morning, later on in the morning, we got off.
When the tide
off the beach, you know. Yeah.
So those are your first two invasions.
Yeah. I got a whole story about that. The captain wrote about it. The night that would never end. That was the title of it, that he titled it, because it was a long night.
Yeah. Especially when you'd been told the Japanese had broken through the lines.
Oh, yeah.
So how much time do you have to recover after that invasion?
Well, sometimes maybe a week or so. But we made a lot of invasions in New Guinea, several of them, probably at least eight of them, D-Day landings, D-Day invasions, whatever you want to call them. And then
I don't think that people realize how much went on in New Guinea because this was early on and they were, the Japanese had gotten that far, right? And then
they were getting ready to get in Australia.
Exactly.
From Port Moresby, they were going to go on into Australia. Yeah.
What were some of the other aspects of those remaining invasions of New Guinea you remember and you'd like to talk about?
Well, one anniversary of it's coming up pretty quick, April 22nd. There was we were supposed to make a landing at Hollandia, New Guinea. And I heard the minister talking to all the soldiers on the fantail, which was my station, General Quarter Station, and they were telling the men that there was going to be probably at least 70% casualties. You know, that's a lot.
These are the troops you were carrying?
Yeah. Yeah, we probably had 300 or 400 on the ship. But about 6 o'clock in the morning, they were shelling the beach, and we went in about 7, And there weren't any Japs there. They'd all ran up into the hills.
Oh.
And one guy got, shot himself in the foot, and another guy drowned in a swamp. Actually, there was only one casualty death on that landing. But we thought that was really going to be a bad landing.
Now, do you ever get a leave, a rest and recreation in this during this period, or is it continuous?
No, not until 44, February 44, we went to Australia.
That was, what, a year or more later?
Yeah, let's see. Well, yeah, we left in May of 43, and then we had this leave in February 44.
So you're out there continuously for 9 months.
Yeah.
Now, once the New Guinea campaign is completed, are there some additional invasions that your ship is involved in?
Yeah. New Britain. Well, let's see. Did I tell you about New Britain? No, I didn't tell you about New Britain.
No.
Oh, that's where we got stuck on the beach, New Britain. Yeah, I told you about that.
Oh, the night that never ended. That would never end, yes.
Yeah. And then, we just went on up the coast of New Guinea. After Hollandia, what one was that? I got a list of all of them at home in the order of which we did. And,
but you essentially were in every invasion of the island, yeah.
Just about. And then after we got done with New Guinea, that's when we went up to the Philippines and landed on October 20th, 44, which was my 20th birthday.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You weren't even old enough to vote yet.
No, I don't think so.
No, you were 21.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, while you're doing these, are the invasions of some of the other islands like Iwo Jima and Guadalcanal taking place? So are there other...
Well, Guadalcanal was over with before I ever got... Before I even got over there. But see, there was a Central Pacific unit that was making landings in Central Pacific, like Guam and different places like that.
You know, so that's a different theater. You're in a different theater, yeah.
Yeah. The theater I was in was... General MacArthur was... the kingpin. And most of the landings were pretty well planned, and we didn't suffer a lot of casualties like they did at Tarawa. Or, you know, that was, there was over 1,000 Marines killed on Tarawa.
That was a different command theater, right? Was that the Navy command over?
Central Pacific, I think it was, I don't know if it was Nimitz.
Or Halsey, someone, yeah.
Yeah, that. They didn't get the Marines ashore, and they had to wade through water about this deep, and while they were doing that, they were getting shot at from the Japs on the beach, and I think there was over 1,000 casualties.
They couldn't get the craft up on the beach because of the coral and everything?
Yeah.
Well, I interrupted you when you said you were landing in the Philippines. You want to tell us more about that?
Yeah, well, you heard of Tokyo Rose?
Yes.
Well,
you might explain briefly who she is in case.
Well, she used to try to demoralize all of us sailors and soldiers over there. And she would say that the Leyte Gulf was a graveyard for LSTs. Which kind of turned out for us, because when we went in there, we hit a sandbar, stuck on a sandbar, you know.
How far away from the beach?
We were probably, maybe half a mile or maybe longer than that. But we were lucky, we got off, and we went on into the beach and unloaded. But before all this happened, one Japanese plane came over And every damn ship was shooting at that airplane. And nobody ever hit him. He came down like this, between the ships. And the gunners just followed him right on down, see? And a lot of ships shot each other.
I was wondering, yeah.
Yeah.
And was he strafing you?
No, he just was fooling around, I think, trying to draw fire.
Okay.
Trying to do what he did best, got the ships to fire into each other. But he never got hit. So then he took off, went way up, and went out of sight. But later on, we found out that a P-38 got him.
Oh.
But there must have been $1 million worth of ammunition fired at him.
Including your ship?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So after that ship came, then the landing occurred?
After we got off the beach?
Yeah. I mean, was that a very hot beach? Were you under fire?
No.
Okay.
No. But there were some pretty gruesome sights at that beach, which I didn't go to see. They said, the guys on the bow were telling me that there had been a pillbox right there, right in front of where we beached. And there were, I guess it had sustained a direct hit because there were some legs standing up in there yet.
This is from the ship bombardment had direct hit it,
yeah. Yeah. I didn't even go up to see it because that was enough for me.
I guess.
So, anyway, we got out of that all right. But a month later, when we went up there to resupply the troops, that was when they started using kamikaze planes. That was the first ones. And I saw two hospital ships got hit that day with kamikaze planes. And we had, I think that day we shot down about two or three planes that came at us.
Your LST did.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah.
So the LSTs were targets for the kamikaze planes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. They would go after anything. But they didn't, we heard that the pilots in those planes were half drunk when they took off. They gave them sake to drink while they were flying toward their target. And that's why, that's probably one of the reasons why we didn't get hit. But we did shoot two or three down that day.
But at least some of them were successful in attacking ships of...
They sunk some LSTs up at, I think it was at Iwo Jima they sunk some. They sunk some destroyers with kamikaze planes. Yeah, they did a lot of damage.
There are pictures of them attacking some even larger capital ships too. So
yeah.
That was quite a devastating
aircraft carriers.
Weapon. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So was this one of your last invasions?
No, we had another bigger one.
Oh,
Lingayen Gulf. That convoy that went up there, invasion convoy. That was over 30 miles long. And we did get hit up there in the bow doors. It blew a hole about that big around.
What do you think hit you?
Mortar shell.
Oh.
Yeah, it wounded two or three soldiers that were right there. It was, then up there they told us Japs were swimming underneath boxes and coming up to the ships and putting charges on the ships, blowing them up. So any box you saw, I don't know if there was anybody under any of those boxes or not, but...
Did you ever hear of a ship actually being attacked by a swimmer? Or was this...
Well, no, really. But they said, they put out a lot of information like that to keep you on the ball.
Right.
You know?
That's smart.
You know, over there later on in you know when that destroyer Cole got bombed over in Yemen?
Right.
You see, they weren't even watching for anything like that.
Yeah.
They should have been because they were in a hostile port, but they weren't, and that's what happened. You know, that was a bad, blew a 17-foot hole in that ship.
A small little inflatable boat or whatever it was.
Yeah. You see, during the war, you don't let anything like that go by. If anything like that was coming at us, we'd just shoot first and,
yeah,
you know.
Better be safe.
Right.
So this might, how long a beach was this invasion? If it was a 30-mile long convoy.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. Lingayen Gulf is, starting from the north, it starts like this and comes way down like this and goes back up. So ships were landing all around in there.
Sort of like a D-Day size invasion.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a lot of... And then those guys that landed there, they went on down, worked their way south toward Manila. The troops that landed there.
Before you get to them, how much opposition was there on the beach there when your craft
went in? As far as we were concerned, well, we got hit, but there didn't seem to be that much opposition as far as we were concerned.
In terms of machine guns or rifle,
yeah. Although I did see a couple ships away from us that a shell landed in the forward gun tub, and I don't know if those guys jumped out of there or if they were blown out of there, but they all went out at the same time.
Okay.
So I don't know what really happened, and I never did find out.
But they were hit, yes.
Yeah, so, there was a couple of ships away from us.
So you were under significant fire.
Yeah.
Once you land your ship and the cargo or the men and go off, do you come back again with supplies, or what is your duty?
Not right away, you know, because from Leyte Gulf to Lingayen Gulf, that's you're talking about this probably 700 or 800 miles or more. So after we got off the beach, we just anchored in the bay for a while. And kept watching out for boxes, you know.
Right.
And then after that, we went back down to, I think we went back down to Leyte Gulf.
Well, how do they supply the beach? Do they have to make that 700-mile trip to supply the beach?
Yeah.
They don't have large craft. Well, I have a picture of a big ship with supplies that you could transport to the beach for them, but that's not the case, I gather.
Well, they used LSTs mostly because you could run the ship right up on the beach.
Right.
These other kind of ships we're talking about, cargo ships, they had to put their cargo on like one of these LCVs, LCVPs, 36-foot boat.
Okay.
And that's how they had to unload their stuff.
Oh, they couldn't unload to an LCT from a cargo ship?
They could, but I don't never.
Okay, that
I don't
wasn't
remember
did, yeah.
seeing them do that. No, they usually, they may have done that more than what I think.
But I understand this was not something that your ship was assigned to do.
No. After we got unloaded, why, we'd go right back to where we came from. Usually.
Now during these periods, starting in New Guinea. When you're going from place to place, are you under risk of submarine attacks?
Oh, yeah.
How do you avoid that? Do you zigzag?
Well, you have a lot of guys watching.
Right.
And then a lot of guys spreading rumors, you know? They say, oh, I saw a periscope over there, or over here. But see, that's good in a way because that keeps people on the ball, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Do you know of any stories where LCTs were under attack from submarines? Was that a target they would take on?
Oh yeah, there was when we first went off up to over to Australia, an LST had been hit by a torpedo. Just as it was leaving Sydney, I guess it was, or Brisbane.
Oh my gosh!
Boy, that was really blown up. The tank, the stern of the ship was blown up like that, rounding. The deck was rounding like that, blown up like a balloon.
Huh.
Yeah.
Did the sink ship? The ship sink right away, or did it?
No, it didn't sink.
Okay.
No.
So it survived that.
But it killed a lot of guys.
Of course,
it.
Yeah.
Because it got hit right in the cruise quarters.
Oh, nuts.
And, I forget how many guys got killed. They never would tell you anything like that over there, but later on, since I belong to the Illinois LST Association, I found out a lot of things that I didn't know before. You know, the guys would write letters to the paper and tell them how many guys got killed, you know, and, yeah.
Okay, so I interrupted you again. When you would finish that invasion, you'd return back 700 miles to your home base.
Yeah.
What happened next?
Excuse me. Well, we got ready for another one.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they didn't let us fool around.
Mm-hmm. Had you had your rest and recreation in Australia at this point? I'd forgotten
yeah.
the timing.
Yeah.
How long was that? How long a period did you get?
10 days. 10 days.
Were you received favorably by the Australians? Did they host you well, or?
Well, yeah, but a friend of mine was, some funny things happened to me in Australia, to this friend of mine. We weren't together at the time, but some Aussie came up to him and asked him for, he asked him for a cigarette, I think. And when he reached in his pocket to get a cigarette for him, that's when the guy, poked him one, I guess, knocked him down,
slugged
took his
him?
Money.
Oh, my gosh.
And I had a problem where I was walking along the sidewalk, and some Aussie said, hey, come here. And he kind of showed he had a bottle, you know. So we went into a little vestibule in front of a store. And I asked him how much, and he said, £10, which was like about $30.
Whoa.
So I gave him a 10-pound note, and boy, just the minute I gave it to him, he took off running. Of course, when I opened the bottle up, you know what was in it? Tea. Yeah. Of course, people...
They didn't... Why do you think there was such an animosity against the people who were helping them?
Well, you know, that's the way some people are, you know. Just like over in Iraq, probably got the same thing going on there. These guys were kind of, well, they saw an easy way to make some money, see? Yeah.
Okay. But other than that, I hope you had a good 10 days of...
Yeah.
Out of the theater.
Oh, yeah. I just remembered that.
Of course.
That
was remarkable.
Big,
yeah.
I was a big sucker. Yeah.
Or a nice guy. So yeah. you finished your leave and you're back on station.
Yeah.
What's happening next?
Well, let's see. That was in... Say, we went down there in 44, February, and then we came back up to Milne Bay. And I forget, we made some more landings in New Guinea, I guess. And then in October 44, that's when we made the Leyte Gulf invasion.
I got us out of sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens after that?
Well, then, not too long after that, then we made the landing at Lingayen Gulf. And later on, after that was over with, we went into Manila, because that had been secured by the soldiers, you know. So we were the first LST in Manila Bay.
Oh my gosh.
But that was, that bay was full of sunken ships. They said 300 of them all together.
Of which Navy?
Mostly Japanese. You know. We went right over the top of some of them.
My gosh. Were you able to land? Were you able to go ashore?
Yeah. Yeah, we went right up to a dock and opened our bow doors and dropped the ramp right on the dock.
Oh.
We're just short of the dock.
But did you get time to see Manila at all? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, we walked around a little bit, but it was really bombed bad. I got pictures of that. Yeah.
This was mostly the bombing that the Americans had done to return, or had that occurred back when the Japanese had taken over?
I think it probably, I don't think the Japs bombed Manila too much.
Back in 41, yeah.
I think most of that was from American bombs.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Japs really treated those people in the Philippines terrible.
Was your ship doing some, did it have some duties in the Manila Bay? Is that why you were shipping there?
Yeah, we must have taken something in there, some kind
supplies
of cargo.
Supplies and things, right.
Or I forget now just what. We must have taken, because they sent us up there, and we must have had something, cargo,
right,
on the ship to take up in there.
Supporting the troops.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what happens next?
Well, that's kind of getting toward, let's see, that was around in April. I'm going to say around in April 45.
Mm-hmm.
That Lingayen Gulf invasion was in January 45. And then this happened after that, probably maybe a couple months afterwards. And then I'm trying to remember, there wasn't too much that we had to do after that. I think we were getting pretty well, the war was getting pretty well over.
I know that there were plans being made for the invasion of the mainland,
yeah,
of Japanese. Now, was your ship going to be part of that planned invasion?
Well, yeah, that's where we went back down to New Guinea, and we were loading up a bunch of, you know, stuff for the army. And about that time is when they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima. So after that, why, I think we went up to Leyte Gulf and just anchored there in the bay. And that's about the time I got my orders to come back home.
So the war had ended, but
mm-hmm.
So one thing the bombs had done was make sure you didn't have to be part of an invasion of the Japanese mainland.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were one of the early, you had enough points to get out among the first people?
Yeah, because, see, I signed up for what they call a minority cruise. And that's until you're 21. Well, see, I went in when I was 17, and I just about got out when I was 21.
My gosh.
My birthday was in October 20th, and I got out December 5th, so that's pretty good timing.
Right. How did you get back? How did they get you back to the States?
Oh, came back on a Danish transport ship.
Oh my gosh.
Took us 20 days to come back. From the, let's see, from the 10th of September to about the 1st of October. And that ship was going about 20 knots all the time.
Wow. And it could go straight. It didn't have to worry about submarines any longer.
Yeah.
And what port did it land on in the States?
We went, we were supposed to go into Frisco. But they came back into Seattle, and that's where we got off, and then I got to come back to the, sent me back to St. Louis, I think, or to Chicago and then to St. Louis. Now, I didn't get any travel pay coming back home because I joined a Navy in St. Louis, see?
Oh.
And I got discharged in St.
Right.
Louis. I think I got 75 cents.
Even then, that didn't go very far. And where was your home?
Michigan.
You had to get from St. Louis to Michigan?
Well, at the time, I didn't go to Michigan. I went to my brother-in-law's place in Chicago, or my aunt's place, I forget which. Yeah.
Now, has that been, was that where you were working, you said?
Yeah.
When you started out this and this thing?
Yeah, and then I went back to work for one of my old superintendents, but I didn't work there very long. A couple of weeks and I quit. Then I started something else.
What was it like to return, having spent, you know, your late teens and your early 20s as in the Navy?
Well,
becoming a senior raider in the Navy.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, I don't know. Chicago was a pretty good place to go to. They, during the war, you didn't even have to pay to ride a streetcar in Chicago. You know, they all treated servicemen real good.
Did you ever consider staying in the Navy as a career?
Well, I was glad to get out, really. But I don't know if I would have stayed in. I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, you had done well. You were told me your rank when you...
Yeah, I was first class when I got on.
Yeah.
If I had stayed in, I could have been chief. But, you know, it's still... You don't have much liberty, you know, unless the Navy says, well, you can go out tonight or the weekend or something like that. It's a lot different in civilian life. You can go out every night if you want. But when you're aboard ship and out in the bay, you don't get to come home every night.
Exactly. I know, I can understand. It's just, it had been such a formative part of your life that, very few people have spent the years from 17 to 21 in the battle situation.
But I got a lot of benefit from being in the Navy. I learned a good trade, electrical trade.
Right. Well, is there any other things you'd like to tell us about your memories of those years in the Navy?
Well, that pretty much sums it up. Pretty good. I might have left some stuff out, but that's pretty good.
And you had a chance to see a part of the world you might not have never seen otherwise if you...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I never would have gone over there. I never would have gone to Australia or the Philippines or any place else over there. Yeah.
Well, I thank you for the interview, and we thank you for your service. I admire that, and I appreciate what you did.
Well,
and I'm glad you could join us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, a little bit of everything. LSD, the Pidney's Forge. I got one on there from the forest, though.
Who should he send it to?
To you. If I want to send you something. I was thinking about maybe sending you that story about the night that we met.
Today is...